Make sure you get as loud and clear.
Welcome to Used Wigs Radio.
This is the radio station with nothing but...
Lonely. Download some friends.
Continuous programming to the people in Philadelphia and the Delaware Valley.
In baseball, the Phillies defeated the Braves 4-1 yesterday.
Philadelphia Mayor John
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Used Wigs Radio podcast number 31. On tonight's episode, the boys prepare for their annual trip to sunny Puerto Vallarta, Mexico for the International Men of Radio Hard Body Competition. To get in shape and not being able to afford pricey stomach stapling surgery, the boys opt for a back alley stomach paper clipping surgery. Enjoy the horrific bloody aftermath and abdominal scarring. Hi, fellas. How's your, how you feeling? You lose any weight?
Your introductions always take me by surprise. I don't know how to react to...
With the paper clipping surgery?
That healthy dose of fiction, yeah.
Yeah, we never live up to, really live up to what I, that's what I envision. When we have money, when we have production, money to spend on production and cameras, these are the type of shows we will make and create. I think that's a very, visceral, very, visual show we have planned. We'll get to that. But first, Todd, tonight I like to call this your show because...
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
I did an interview with a group called Amina, and we'll get to that later. But they are a little bit challenging, a little bit off the beaten path, and I thought it would be an interesting show.
Have you ever been on the beaten path? It's so dangerous. It's so dangerous.
Yeah, so this is the road less traveled, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be an interesting kind of show topic is to talk about all things avant-garde, you know, maybe in music and in television and movies.
What does that term, what does that phrase actually mean literally,
avant-garde? It means front-garde, I think. In French, it means like front-garde. But I think the reason, the origin of that is such that they are at the forefront, you know? So they're the movers and the shakers, they're pushing boundaries, they're the trailblazers.
To put it in layman's terms, to dumb it down, this is challenging stuff.
This is challenging stuff to, well, to us now. But, you know, I think that the trend of avant-garde-ism in any genre or in any field is that when it comes out, it's challenging and it's pushing boundaries. But the successful ones, whether it be music, art, film, then it becomes accepted. You know, like the reason why, I mean, I can speak to certainly the visual arts at least, and the reason why a lot of these people are famous is because they push boundaries, but now it's like wildly acceptable, and it's widely acceptable.
But there's two paths. It either eventually becomes mainstream, or they always stay on the fringe. I mean, you know, somebody like a John Cage, he's always going to be interesting, but he's never going to be mainstream, and he's even only going to influence the mainstream to a degree because, you know, his stuff you can't really tap. I mean, most of it you can't tap your foot to. You know, there's nothing about it that a mainstream artist
can I whistle to it.
You might be able
to
snap my fingers.
You know, it might be safer to say that everything that is avant-garde does not eventually become mainstream, but a lot of things that have eventually become mainstream at one point were avant-garde. Is that safer to say?
That maybe,
right?
Maybe.
I mean, at least when you speak about art, even something that seems as tame as impressionism, you know, at the time when it came out was very upsetting to people. You know, it really, really challenged people. And the old story is when they first had the first group show, that every evening the guards would have to go around and wipe the spit off the paintings. Literally, people were coming and spitting on the paintings because people weren't ready for that. You know, like that was taking the visual arts to a place where they were not comfortable. And now we look at that and it's like, oh, that's like mug and mouse pad and calendar art. I mean, it's so safe.
Right.
But for the time, it was really challenging. And then, you know, Picasso is the same way, where abstraction before Picasso was nowhere what it was when he kind of came out with it, or when he brought it to the Western world.
All right, then. And I think this show will also allow Russ to play some of his stranger, quirkier music. Russ, a big fan of, like, Frank Zappa, who you would consider very avant-garde, right, Russ?
Yeah, right. Some of his catalog. But he was really able to play kind of all corners. So, he definitely had some more accessible music.
Gotcha. Well, Todd, why don't we start off the show and let's challenge our listeners. Now, let's just throw this out there. The people... This is challenging. We just got an email from someone saying, don't challenge me. But we have to, people, challenge is good sometimes, all right? What's bad in the world? You know what's bad in the world? Conservatism. People who don't like change.
Right.
So let's do something different, challenge ourselves, and expand our horizons. So, Todd, what are we going to play first?
Well, the first thing we're going to hear this evening is a selection by Panda Bear.
A selection.
Which is kind of, I guess, the solo project of the guy who used to lead the Animal Collective, which was very challenging in its own right. And this is a fairly new album called Person Pitch, and the tune is called Comfy in Nautica.
To tell me how to do.
Panda Bear with Comfy and Nautica. Did you... Well, I'll assume that you loved it or hated it.
I was challenged by it.
You know, it sounded a lot to me like a Beach Boys song.
Yeah, that, and that's a lot of the ink that he's getting about this album, is that it's very Brian Wilson inspired. Mm. You know, and Brian Wilson was pretty avant-garde in a lot of his career.
Oh, yeah, and it sounded like a late-era Beach Boys kind of, not to be mean, but filler track. You know, it wasn't like the four hits off the album. Mm. It was where Brian Wilson was like, all right, I penned the hits, we'll get them out of there, but here's what I like doing.
It's like what the inside of his head sounded like when he was a recluse with long fingernails and a giant beard in his room.
I liked it. I think it, that music, that style, likes the kind of drone, the repetition. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where there's no high points, no hills and dales, you know, it's just that. And do you think that, and we were discussing on our way over here, Todd, a lot of like the electronica movement and music like that, repetition is big because it was originally music produced for the drug culture, where they needed that, you know, you get that really good high, whatever you're dropping, whatever you're on. The music that's good for that is like repetitive, so you can kind of
because like we were saying, it becomes a mantra,
right?
Like you can just kind of almost move or rock back and forth or dance back and forth a little bit over and over again,
right? Like the monks when they were when they did mantras and stuff, they were all stoned out their ass. Like, I mean, you wouldn't believe the shit they were doing. I mean, crystal meth labs, just a lot of really really funky stuff. But I liked it. And Panda Bear's getting pretty big now. Like, I see his name a lot, and, you know, in the indie circles.
It's one guy who goes by Panda Bear?
Yeah, I think it's just the lead singer or the front man of Animal Collective. Which would make you wonder, like, were the other people in Animal Collective other animals? Like, they could have been.
Would you think that, to get off topic, but it's also an avant-garde lifestyle, is the furries, the people who like to dress up. It's dress up in giant animal costumes, like mascot costumes. They're called furries.
Plushies.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch. And a lot of it, like, they like to, you know, go to conventions, dress up as, like, giant rabbits. And there's that whole idea of, like, having, you know, like, animalistic sex.
Yeah, I thought it was a fetish.
Yeah, it is a fetish. It definitely is.
Yeah, people are in, like, the stuffed animals and the giant mascot costumes and stuff.
But having sex in those, the cleaning bills, because, you know, this, the it's gross, right? It's not. We're against it, right? I mean,
are we anti plushie?
I'm up for any lifestyle.
Not really anyone from our audience?
Yeah, no. You know, there's
except
probably
the conservatives that we
right. Oh, that's true.
Have a plushie listening than a conservative, right?
So there's this 400-pound guy in a beaver outfit in his basement listening to us going, "Oh, screw these guys! I don't listen to them anymore." we'll let that go. Plushies, furries, do whatever you want, and I'm sure you're good at it. Todd, of course, as we were saying, when we challenge you. Music, different genres, movies, music, comedy.
Yeah. Well, you have any ideas or thoughts?
No, of course I do, Todd. I like to talk. Well, I mean, just to kind of, you know, ease into it. You know, you have all your lame sitcoms out there. You have your own, I mean, all the lame comedy shows. But back, you know, kind of in our generation, when Mr. Show hit.
Mr. Show.
You know, where it took really basic comedic premises and just went off in a real warp direction.
And you know that is fairly avant-garde because, I mean, if you can remember back to the first time you saw it.
Right.
It was almost like you weren't quite sure, is this funny or do I, you know, like you're kind of...
You know what, though? I think it's really hard. Well, okay, if you're going to put it in our generation, fine.
Uh-huh.
But I never watched Mr. Show and was like, whoa, because it's Monty Python.
You think it's Monty Python?
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's Monty Python without... I mean, Monty Python, when they put the shows on TV, they did put some canned laughter in there to kind of, like, help the audience along. But Mr. Show is basically Monty Python without that.
That's a good point. And they would not have existed without Monty Python, for sure. Yeah, so Monty Python should really be credited for being more avant-garde.
He's a really funny guy, Monty Python.
Well, and even Monty Python, like, they came from the Goon Show, which was, like, in the 50s, I think, in Britain. Which was, you know, which was like a sketch troupe kind of thing. So I mean, you know, you can trace this stuff back.
I'm not going to though.
Okay.
I know you could. I know it's possible to trace it back, but I refuse.
The unfunny guy from Kids in the Hall on one of the VH1 shows talking about 80s or 90s culture, or whatever, was talking about Monty Python being on MTV. Right. So when we were young, in the late 80s, it was on twice a day on MTV, and he was saying that a good litmus test for to find out if you thought someone was cool is if they got Monty Python or not, you know? And that's kind of an interesting way to look at things that are on the fringe as a litmus test. You know, like if someone gets it and likes it, then you know, they're okay in your book, and then if they don't, then it's not for them.
Right. Well, I was playing Dungeons and Dragons with my friends. I mean, watching my friends play Dungeons and Dragons. We would just spend countless hours, like every other dorky kid of that era, quoting the Holy Grail. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and that was also kind of a litmus test where, wow, George can do like 12 lines just from the one scene where, you know, the knights, you know, where the, you know, bring out your dead scene.
It's funny, and I think it's actually a little unfortunate that Monty Python now is associated with uncool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, well, yeah. It's weird how that happened.
Yeah, they definitely are, though, aren't they? I mean, they're washed up. Like, do you remember when they came on Saturday Night Live and did the parrot sketch?
Oh.
And it was a disaster.
Was it
atrocious?
Well, you know, I'm not so sure if I think of them as washed up. I just think that even people who are fans at this point, it's almost like this guilty pleasure thing, which I don't think it needs to be, you know. But actually, the only thing that I've seen them do that really was washed up was, not that long ago, they did like a 30th anniversary special that was on the BBC.
Yeah.
And the original guys got together and they did like a handful of new skits, and they were brutally bad.
Yeah.
Well, along those lines, Mr. Show kind of opened up the doors for more, you know, eclectic, wacky, kind of nonlinear comedy.
And by the way, listeners, if you're not familiar with Mr. Show,
yeah,
it's an HBO comedy, ran for 4 seasons. With David Cross and Bob Odenkirk.
And Jack Black got his start on that, and they kind of spun off Tenacious D off of Mr. Show.
And Sarah Silverman. Appearances when she was very young.
Brian Posehn, a lot of real funny people. So check that out. I'm sure there's box sets out there.
There definitely are, yeah. But we can't talk about comedy and avant-garde without mentioning Andy Kaufman, I don't think.
I'm sorry.
I knew you were going to say that. And you can even trace him back to Lenny Bruce.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, same thing.
I won't, though. Again, okay. Russ, this podcast is not about work for us or the listener. We do the least amount of show prep. Okay.
I don't know if I buy that. I don't think Lenny Bruce was anywhere near as
no, no. Time. He wasn't anywhere near.
Yeah.
But for his time.
For his time, okay.
It's the same thing.
It was iconoclastic at his time.
Yeah. I mean, even when we first talked about this podcast, you were saying the Beatles. And I was like, as avant-garde, give me a break.
Yeah.
And you said, yeah, but they broke down some barriers. And even that, I question, because a lot of the things that the Beatles did, Sgt. Pepper and everything, they did that because they were hearing what other people were doing. Yes, they did plenty of original things, but they're not as original as people give them credit for.
Yeah, they played a lot of catch-up, and they admitted to it, and they did a lot of drugs, and that also kind of...
You know, you might even argue that Yoko Ono was even more so than the Beatles.
Right here on Newswigs Radio, folks, we are saying Yoko Ono is bigger than the Beatles. Better than the Beatles.
Avant-garde.
No, she's just better, Todd.
It's a very good thing, actually, that Jeff is here to kind of, like, you know, referee this nerd.
Yeah, I was going to say, it is me grabbing the ping pong ball of the ping pong nerd championship match here.
This forms a three-dimensional object known as a cube, or a frinkahedron, in honor of its discoverer.
What do you think about Yoko Ono?
Besides being...
what do you think about her work?
I think she's just well, musically, she ruined many songs just warbling. If you like the Rolling Stone Rock and Roll Circus, where you could hear her just warbling for no reason, just so she could get her beak in there and feel like she's adding something to it. I listened to some of the Plastic Ono Band, and that's just pure crap.
Okay.
I mean, I don't care. And I know that's avant-garde, and at the time it was like John Lennon's like, this is what music is now. And it's, to me, it's noise.
I would think that if anything that she was doing was rooted in some kind of tradition or something, and she was like infusing it with Western music or something, then I might be interested in it. But I don't think that she has a musical bone in her body. She might,
did some nights. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. She might be able to think in ways that other people can't and put things together in odd ways that are interesting. And I'll give her that. But I would not call her a musician.
Okay. Well, she was a visual artist. Right. Married a musician. And
right.
That, I guess, parlayed into her musical career. But she was a visual artist, and it was an avant-garde visual artist at that.
We went from talking about funny stuff to Yoko Ono. That's a bad, bad thing to do. Well, we'll get back to more comedy. We'll play a song now. But I want to get to what I think is the funniest avant-garde comedy out there, and that's a teaser right now, and we'll get to that. But we're going to play a selection by me, Jeff Lyons of Uswigs Radio. challenging to me, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, completely out there musically, you know. To me, a lot of instrumental music is challenging. People like to hear lyrics and they like to hear people sing. A lot of people like music because of the voice. There's so much great, insanely great instrumental rock music out there like this. 65 Days of Static, and this is Await Rescue. Use Wigs Radio, podcast number 31. And that was 65 Days of Static with their smash hit song, Await Rescue. That band is from Sheffield, England, guys. I really, really love that type of music. I love epic cacophonic, what's the word? Cacophony of this sound just building and exploding. It's very Mogwai, Jaga, Jazzist kind of music, explosions in the sky, Russian circles, all really great instrumental music. It's great to just sit back and do nothing and listen to it. And that's, to me, challenging, I think, for the average person. Just do something different. Listen to music without words. Make up your own words.
I like that piece a lot. As a matter of fact, I like the selections that you guys came up with. But maybe because I like the really challenging kind of music.
Yeah.
Especially like the two that you brought tonight.
Because they're great and we're great. That's why.
That's
Todd, we're going to get to your interview with those sweet little honeys from the netherworld.
from the netherworld, yeah.
Anima. How do you say their name?
Amina.
Amina. They're so cute. Did you brought one here, didn't you, in your pocket?
They wouldn't let me take one, actually, in the show.
I heard it's illegal. You only keep them for 3 weeks.
As you're walking out, wait, we can take these?
Put down that Amina. I teased what I think is, and Todd, I made you sit down and I made you watch an episode on the web. And the beauty of this, if you go to Adult Swim and put in Tim and Eric, awesome show, good job. They are so completely, completely out there. I think it's avant-garde comedy at its best. Where they, it's challenging in the sense that they use the lowest end computer graphics, production value, everything they do. They try to make it look as cheap as possible, as almost visually unpleasing. I mean, these two guys are pretty normal looking, good looking guys. They like purposely put on weight and just look horrible and put out really, really funny comedy. The most out there sketches, I guarantee you'll dig it. Especially, I mean, you guys will dig it. And I think the average person, give it one or two views, we'll dig it. Todd, am I wrong?
I enjoyed it. Yep.
Yeah.
And it is bizarre.
It's bizarre.
You know,
there we go.
And you know something is against the grain when you can't describe it very easily and very succinctly.
Yeah,
you know?
There's no way to describe it. And it's, you know, and luckily,
especially to like someone older than you.
And they don't, belabor jokes. I mean, it's short hits, it's quick hits, and they just seg from one topic to the next without any sort of, you know, rhyme or reason. So, check them out. You can go to, I believe, Adult Swim, or go to timanderic.com, or read the interview Usewigs had with them a while back. They're from Philadelphia, Temple University.
Represent.
Represent. Todd, let's get back to you and your two new girlfriends.
Amina. Okay, so I'll tell you everything I know about them. They were the string section on a number of Sigur Rós songs.
Ooh.
And that four girls met at the Reykjavik, yeah. Which is, I guess, a pretty well-known, well-respected musical institute in the capital of the Netherlands. I'm sorry, not the Netherlands.
Iceland.
He's the Netherlands. So in Iceland, and they're classically trained, and they're string musicians. But then they got together and they write these kind of slightly bizarre pieces for a number of different instruments. And I saw them at XPN World Cafe, and they come out dressed very, very nicely, and they're cute, and they look younger than they are. And they move around the stage throughout the songs and play a variety of different instruments, and it's pretty well choreographed and actually pretty visually interesting. But they play everything from traditional string instruments to glasses, like you've seen people do on the Ed Sullivan Show years ago. They bow the saw, or a couple saws. They play electric guitars and percussion instruments. They have a lot of very interesting, and by their own invention, electronic devices, you know, inputs and things like that, that they kind of wear on their hands. And my favorite thing was that they took their bows and they held them at the topmost part, and they stood at the edge of vibraphones and xylophones, and they pulled them upwards so that the bow was kind of dragging across the edge of the xylophone or the vibraphone, which we call a key or a bar.
Bars, yeah.
Yeah. So, and it makes this really like this really interesting sound too. So it was a fantastic show. And when you listen to the music, I think it's very pleasant. But it's even more interesting to see these ladies play live because they're moving around the stage from one fairly non-traditional instrument to another, and they put on a great show.
Well, why don't we listen to a little right now, Todd?
Bring it.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I just, Todd, I want to know what these girls sound like. I mean...
Well, they speak broken English.
Okay, very funny.
Yeah, there's some comedic value there.
Yeah.
Right, so, and before the show, and I, again, really enjoyed the show. The music just really washed over me.
Right.
And I needed it.
Yeah.
And I needed to take a music shower. Uh-huh. You know? But before the show, they were nice enough to grant me an interview. And I got 2 out of 4 to speak with me. And I don't know how they selected the 2 out of 4. I don't know if they were the ones that write the majority of the music or speak English the best, or the ones that were least afraid of me.
Right. Did you have your big, stupid tape recorder?
I had the giant tape recorder, yeah. And,
awesome.
And it was really funny because it took me a good 10 minutes to even try to explain to them what a podcast was.
Right.
I mean, they just weren't aware of it. So, explain to what a podcast was.
It's making you sound like they're like native people. Were they picking bugs? Were they picking bugs off each other and eating them off their fur?
No, they're really hospitable and very sweet. And maybe we should take a listen to 2 out of 4 members of Amina.
I am here at XPN's World Cafe, and I'm sitting with 2 out of 4 members of Amina. They travel to us all the way from Iceland, and they are by far our most exotic guests to this point. I understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Iceland is named such so that it would like confuse pirates, or it would confuse Vikings so that they would think that Iceland was the place where no one lived because it was too cold, and Greenland was the place that was greener and people did live. So at this point, has anyone proposed that they change the names back to Greenland and Iceland so it would be more appropriate?
No.
No. We like it like that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Let me have you guys introduce yourselves. And again, you are 2 out of 4 members, and maybe you can talk about the instruments that you play. And I know all of you play a variety of instruments, right?
Yeah, I'm Hildur, and I'm a violinist. And then, yeah, I play, you know, whatever we have on stage.
Oh, fantastic.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm Edda Rún, and I play the viola, and, yeah.
Okay. And you guys, I understand, met in a very reputable music school, and I guess I assume that you have a background in, like, normal or basic string instruments, and then you've diverted from that, and I know that you play everything from a saw on stage to using synthesizers, and as well glasses of water, right? Mm-hmm. How did you begin to incorporate the more maybe obscure instruments into some of the compositions that you were making?
Well, Well, we never made, you know, any compositions just with strings from the beginning. You know, when we decided to start a band or, you know, make music, we were really curious to use, you know, some things that we had never, you know, used before or tried before or didn't know how to operate, you know.
Uh-huh.
So we just took everything we could, you know, find that would make a sound. And just wanted to try it out, and, you know, that's the first things we did.
And so, and at the end of a performance where you're playing glasses of water, if you break and smash the glasses of water, it's kind of a combination homage to The Who and, like, Greek Wedding. So
I try to avoid breaking the glasses.
Actually, we have this glassophone we have. It's homemade, and it has... how many concerts have you played with it?
Like 100-something.
Yeah, 100-something, and it never has broken. You know, the first time we went abroad with it, we were really scared that it would just break after the first concert or something. But it's been alive for, you know, 3 years or something.
Oh, that's great. And to describe, if I were to describe your music that I'm somewhat familiar with just from some things that I was able to download online, and I got really excited to find out you guys were traveling to Philadelphia, it's very atmospheric and kind of a wall of sound, definitely mood evoking, or it kind of sets a mood. It almost sounds as though it was composed to be the soundtrack to maybe like a non-existent television program or movie, or in some cases like video game music. I mean, it just really kind of sets a tone. Do you set out to try to evoke a certain emotion, or do you try to make it sound sad or happy, or to try to bring about those kind of feelings from the listeners?
Well, we try to make it sound happy, but a lot of the time it ends up like really slow and melancholy.
So, yeah. Well, it's something that just seems to happen naturally. It always takes the direction of melancholy somehow, you know, no matter how hard we try to make a happy song, let's make a upbeat song.
So some people probably, at least in our country, and I assume around the world, have stumbled upon you guys because of your connection with Sigur Rós. And they are almost kind of like, they are to you perhaps like Arthur Fonzarelli or the Fonz from Happy Days is to Pinky Tuscadero. You guys are kind of like a female counterpart perhaps. I mean, your music is kind of similar and you come from the same country. How did you meet those guys and how did you begin touring with them?
Well, we met them, what, how many years ago? 8 years ago?
98 or something.
Yeah, 98, 99. They needed a string quartet to play with them on the debut concert for Ágætis Byrjun. And, yeah, we played there and then we just, you know, worked really well together and they asked us to come touring with them. And then we've just been, you know, working together ever since.
And for sure, I think it's a good fit because people that are drawn to their music most definitely are interested in your music as well. It seems like there's some strong similarities there. Let me ask you this, kind of switching gears back to the culture. When you travel to America, is there any food that you find revolting compared to the kind of food that you eat in Iceland or vice versa? Is there something that you eat in Iceland that we might find particularly interesting or weird?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there's, I think your food is a lot more greasy than our food.
A lot of fast food.
Yeah, you have a lot of fast food, but also, you know, you have also a lot of variety of health foods and it's much easier to be a vegetarian, for example. Here, because you have kind of more variety, maybe, than in a lot of places. But, yeah, we're not really that fond of, you know, all the French fries and all that stuff. But, yeah, we have some pretty disgusting things in Iceland as well. Like, you know, sour sheep testicles and, you know, shark that... Yeah, shark that, you know, smells like pee and stuff, you know.
It sounds delightful. You had mentioned that a lot of the culture that you get in Iceland, maybe perhaps movies and television programs, come from the Western world. So what are some favorite TV shows and or movies in Iceland that have come from America or perhaps even English-speaking nations?
Well, my favorite program is Twin Peaks, but they're not showing that right now, so...
Yeah, I really like that too, actually. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't really watch that much television.
So Twin Peaks is something that you guys were drawn to, though.
Yeah.
And so how great would it be to be able to, like, score in, like, an episode or a movie for Twin Peaks? I think your music would go really well with it.
Yeah, that would be like a dream. Yeah, yeah. I would really like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you guys go and prepare for your show. I'm completely psyched to listen to it, and we'll most definitely play some of your music on our podcast so we can introduce some people, perhaps new listeners, to your music as well. So thank you so much for your time, and this is Todd Maroon from Used Wigs and...
Etta.
And Hildur from Amina.
Yeah. Signing off.
Okay, that was Gut Bucket with Snarling Wrath of Angry Gods off their album Dry Humping the American Dream.
That was good, Russ.
I love that song. I love that band. They are fantastic.
Russ, where are they from?
They are from New York City. And that's another band, Todd, that, you know, they're very well known for their stage show as well. Mm-hmm. You know, very improvisational, you know, a tendency to get really heavy, as we just heard. And a great band and a great bunch of guys, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish I was deep enough that I enjoyed more avant-garde movies, film. And I'm really not. I mean, when it comes right down to it, very, like, kiddie pool deep when it comes to my deepness when it comes to movies and stuff. Like, I won't go out there and I won't look legal. I want to watch that Fellini movie or something like that. That's just not...
Have you ever tried to muscle through a Fellini movie?
No. And I don't plan on.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
Is it rewarding at the end?
I didn't find it to be particularly rewarding. I mean, I made my way through Metropolis, which is like from 1923
yeah,
or something. Because,
I kind of watched that too.
Because everybody cites it as such a seminal movie. And I think it was, in terms of people, you know, the kinds of transitions and shots that they used for 1923, I had no idea that that kind of technology was even possible, and nobody else did at the time, clearly. But it's very interesting that a movie from 1923 has influenced the way we do screen wipes and fades and dissolves, because they started it, and they did it all manually. And it's interesting from that perspective, but it goes on for 3 hours, and it's a silent film.
Yeah.
German guy who did Metropolis. So
I don't know the name.
I think his name was Jerry von German. Yeah, I'm pretty sure a German guy.
Well, Jeff, we heard the girls from Amina talk about David Lynch. What's your thoughts on that guy?
Well, if you start out with Eraserhead, I challenge you to get through that crazy movie. Maybe I don't have that gene, that graspable gene that can grasp.
See Naked Lunch also?
Yeah.
That wasn't David Lynch,
no,
was it?
No,
that was it's a, I don't know who did the film, but it's a Burroughs story.
William S. Burroughs, yeah. I mean, I don't think David Lynch. David Lynch, of course, did, you know, Blue Velvet, the
Lost Highway,
and Eraserhead was his first movie. Not a big fan.
Eraserhead is mental.
Yeah.
Is serious.
Oh, David Cronenberg was Naked
Cronenberg.
Lunch. I like David Cronenberg. Cronenberg's got some...
He was Naked Lunch?
Yeah, but that was a very bizarre movie.
Very, yeah.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff. I think he did History of Violence, Cronenberg. Yeah, that's a great movie, by the way. Check that out.
Right. So what would you say is the most avant-garde movie you've ever enjoyed or seen?
That's tough. Porky's Revenge, because it was different than Porky's in so many ways, nuanced ways, that I was like, this must be some sort of art school director might have helmed it. Now, I don't know. That's a good question. I like, all right, here's as Indian as a deep I get. I like Hal Hartley movies. He hasn't done a lot in a while, but he did a lot of, like, low-key indie movies, but they're nowhere near called avant-garde. Like, avant-garde to me would be, you know, I don't even know. What would be an avant-garde movie?
I think the ones that you just said. I mean,
well, the movie we were discussing before, the Philip Glass did the music for.
Yeah, it's a trilogy. Spot me on this, Russ. Pronounce it.
Koyaanisqatsi.
Yeah, which is the first of the three,
yeah.
and ultimately by far the best, I think. And then they kind of subsequently get worse, you know, incrementally. Like the second one is bearable. The third one is just kind of trash.
Second one is Powiskatsi.
Yeah,
and the last one is something with an N.
Yeah, and the last one is just almost like mind's eye. CGI, it's pretty bad. But
yeah.
The first one is just basically an hour and a half movie, right? And correct me or add to this if you think you can.
is that how you're challenging me?
there's no characters, there's no plot. It's almost like watching photography, and it's all time lapsed film, either faster or slower, to go along with a very avant-garde Philip Glass soundtrack.
Very, very repetitive.
Yeah, very geometric and repetitive and kind of mathematical. And it's just showing things like scenes of people crossing streets.
Great! Wow!
And, like, hot dog factories.
Do you hear that? That's the sound of just thousands of keyboards typing into Netflix, trying to spell that word that Russ said that no one will be able to spell.
Good. What do you think? You like the movie, though. You're a fan.
I am a fan of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it sounds good. To me, as I was saying, Todd, it sounds more like a video installation at a modern art museum.
It's moving. And I've shown it to people thinking that everyone would like it because I was really blown away and I was really moved by it, and other people really hated it. You know, even just for the first 3 minutes they tried to watch it.
Well, to me, the movie where all of the sides, where comedy and avant-garde And
I know what you're going to say.
You know, well, you already know what I'm going to say.
Brazil?
Yes. I mean, it's my favorite movie.
Some people pronounce it Brazil.
Brazil.
Right.
By Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
I feel like it meets in the middle from all of those places. Like, mm-hmm. you can laugh at certain points. It's very poignant. It's a social commentary.
Yep.
You know, there's all those kinds of things. It's got the quirky British humor.
I like that movie. Delicatessen. I like that movie. That was
Yeah, that's that. That's the, what's the guy, Jean-Pierre Junot? The guy who did, that's the same guy who did Amelie.
I don't know, Junot?
Children. Yeah.
Which Delicatessen is fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really
All
good movie.
All three of those movies are
good for
really
me.
Beautiful.
I got yeah. one.
And
see, I'm so friggin' avant-garde. You guys can't even hang with me. guys, let's just nip this in the bud right here, this talk. And we'll get back to some more challenging talk. But let's play a song. And, of course, we like Newswigs Radio to promote all good things local Philadelphia. And I'd say probably the most happening avant-garde challenging indie band out there in Philly is... a band called Man Man. Would you agree?
Man Man, yeah. They're opening for Modest Mouse.
Wow, that tells you something, huh?
Yeah.
People like the Modest Mouse. And Todd, when I first...
Did you know that Johnny Marr is in that band now?
Yes.
What's up with that?
Doesn't make me like him anymore. I'm a huge Johnny Marr fan. Loved the Smiths. Loved everything he did. And now I just feel bad for him.
Mm. You don't like Modest Mouse?
No, they give me a headache.
They closed for Man Man.
They closed for Man Man. If you want to know my three headache things, it's Charles Mingus, The Talking Heads, and Modest Mouse.
Okay.
That's it. I just, it's the tone of voice, some sort of pitch thing. I don't know what it is, but I wish they all wouldn't make music anymore.
So we're going to listen to Man Man with The Fog or China from their first album, The Man in a Blue Turban with a dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
Man, Man.
Man, Oh, Man.
Man, I love that album. I think that song is great.
Now, when I hear that music, Todd, I think of you. I picture you in a top hat, in a ringmaster outfit, just marching along while that circus is playing behind you.
I tell you what, I couldn't think of a better way to spend an afternoon.
Just being in the Man Man circus?
I seriously would love to march down the street with that playing, with a top hat.
Yeah, just them following you, and a bunch of other, like, dirty, bearded indie guys, just, like, eating, like, cheese sandwiches, and just kind of... You know what? I think I like them. And, of course, initially, when people embrace something as much as they did, like, they had a cover story in City Paper... I have to be like, no, this isn't any good. And I listen to it. I like it. I'm not crazy, but the thing that rubbed me the wrong way is their giant indie guy beards. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all like, I'm scruffier and scraggler than you could ever be. I'm Bonnie Prince Billy to the nth degree.
Yeah.
I'm so dirty, I smell like onions and shoes, you know?
Yeah. It's about the music.
I knew a lot of guys like that in college.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it was so funny because what you just said, it's about the music. They totally didn't live it. You know, like, it was basically, they had the beards and the hair and they were like so cool and hippies and blah, blah, blah. And we were all about the music. But then if somebody came in who was a little more clean cut and could really wail on an instrument, no, they weren't having you because you didn't look like they did, you know?
That's really interesting you say that because Russ and I actually went to the same college.
Yeah.
And in the art...
It's called Harvard.
You've heard of it? And the art...
Harvard, Kutztown campus?
Yeah, it was like a satellite. The people that had all the piercings and the brightly colored hair were the ones that conceptually were not doing anything interesting.
Really?
And then, I mean, almost always, like pictures of colored pencil drawings of unicorns on clouds, you know? And like the girl has bright red hair and you know, like a pierced septum, you know? So, and then oftentimes the people that just looked like the person next door came in with this work that was really challenging. It was like really upsetting to some people or, you know, like kind of caused a lot of conversation.
Right.
Well, there you go. Why don't we play a song, guys? Yes. Russ, speaking of olden type music from olden days.
Yeah, I figured I'd pick a new song before with Gut Bucket, and this is a song by a band called Can, who a lot of bands now are actually citing them as an influence, and I think when you hear this, you'll hear it, because you got to remember when you hear this song, it's from 1973. This is electronic music, and specifically electronic music being mixed with vocals and with acoustic instruments in a way that really hadn't been heard of before, and these guys are real forebears. So this is a German band called Can, and this is a tune called Spoon.
In the afternoon, hide your spoon, she will be soon. With your fork, wait a night, speaks your joke, she stops your life.
Yeah.
þetta er Hildur úr Aminu. Þú ert að hlusta á Used Wigs Radio. Góða skemmtun.
Okay, that was Can with Spoon.
Sehr gut. Can sehr gut. I'm speaking German, guys. I don't know if you
well
could
done,
tell.
Yeah.
They're a German band. I figured they deserve it. And I will also give them Voice of Flughafen. Thank you. Russ, that was good. That actually was very modern sounding. I guess it's modern sounding because there's so many bands out there playing that type of music. Mm-hmm. You hear a lot of kind of the lo-fi melodic like melodic electronica like Postal Service
yeah.
and that type of music.
Yep.
But that was good stuff. And they're one of those bands that I always heard about. Guys, let's do we don't have a song. Let's do some quick shout outs. Russ, you have anything to shout out?
Yes, I will be shouting out the Canadian online music store, Zunior.com, Zunior.com. It's all indie Canadian artists, fantastic, very well priced. You can buy files at a couple different sound file levels. You can get them at your standard MP3 or all the way up to really high res files. Lots of independent bands on there that you can't get their music elsewhere. Great site.
Awesome. Todd?
If you feel like you've missed the boat or
okay.
train or whatever vehicle when it comes to like modern art, we're talking about, you know, cubism, impressionism, surrealism, minimal art, pop art. It was all avant-garde for the time, but now it's commonplace, right? Well, I think a guy who's working today that is really pushing boundaries and challenging people is if you have Netflix, you can watch his work, The Creme Master Cycle.
Oh yeah.
By Matthew Barney, which is this really
that's out on DVD now?
Yeah.
Did you watch it yet?
I've watched big chunks of it in art when I was in school, which was only like the first and second installment. So now I think like the cycle is complete, and it's just this really strange, bizarre, but visually rich, I guess film, you know, video or film. Not much of a story, no kind of plot, but yeah, interesting,
yeah, really
scary, strange, disturbing. It's not for everybody.
How long is the whole thing?
I think it's five chapters or five installments.
And they reach like an hour or something?
Yeah. The Creme Master Cycle.
One thing, if you go to DeSoto Records website, they have there's a benefit CD out also on Catlick Records, DeSoto Record, Catlick Records. It's called For Callum. It is the son of mega producer Jay Robbins, whose son got diagnosed with a very, very sad muscular disease, and the prognosis isn't good. And of course, any indie rock musician doesn't have a lot of money, and he has a lot of hospital bills. So they're looking for donations to help him out. And there's an excellent, excellent compilation album out on Catlick Records that all the money goes to little Callum, who's over a year old, and it's a good cause, so check that out. And I just want to shout out a band. We're not going to do what you're listening to, but I like to shout out a band that I immediately liked after hearing the first song, and that's very rare for me, guys. I like to, you know, get a couple listens. And they are called The New Ruins. New Ruins. Go to MySpace, The New Ruins. Very good stuff, kind of like despair, alt-rock. Sounds a little bit like Evan Dando, Lemonheads. Really good stuff. Check them out. And I've been enjoying that a lot. So there you go. Guys, anything else challenging you like to throw out there? Anything avant-garde? Anything different you'd like people maybe to check out? No. Huh?
I'd like to leave with a quote.
Oh.
And this is one of my favorite art-related quotes, although it's by a composer by the name of Arnold Schoenberg.
Oh.
But he says, if it is art, it is not for all. And if it is for all, it is not art.
Ooh,
very nice.
That's a little snobbish. Yeah, I think so, guys. All right, guys, that was the challenging avant-garde episode of Used Wigs Radio. We hope you enjoyed it, hope you learned a few things, and if not, we'll be back to playing other stuff.
If you got this far, you met the challenge.
See ya.
Nice to meet you. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Again, it's called Used Wigs Radio.
Used
so,
wigs.
Like a wig that was already used, right?
Okay.
So, I know that sounds weird, right?